listen, to pay attention, and to see them. They want them to see the people that they're exploiting and come to the bargaining table with a decent contract to do the right thing and to treat them with respect.
Kim Kelly, independent labor journalist for More Perfect Union, Means TV, and The Real News, where her series is titled Battleground Brookwood. We'll link to it. That does it for our show. Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Dermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresina, Carla Wills, Tammy Warren. A special thanks to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you, Amy. It is 6 o'clock, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. No, that's wrong. It's time for Off the Wall. There you go. Another Tuesday evening, another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
Yeah, you're right. I'm over here. Can you Can you make me out?
Well, you're kind of low, actually, and I have you pegged.
Really?
So, yeah, so maybe whack that thing on the side. No, I meant your head.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, well, I can always bring you up through that other control. You know what? We'll make do. I think
it's fine.
Yeah. It's what our listeners think that matters in the end, and we always enjoy hearing from you. You can email us. Yeah, get started right away. otw@2600.com. That's our email address. How's your week been?
Uneventful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that's good. Could be worse.
Yeah, just, I don't know, trying to get out in some of the nice weather. But today we have a bit of that tropical storm that started.
Claudette, I believe.
A welcome storm. I mean, well, first of all, the plants and the trees, they love it. And, well, I don't know. I like the rain. I like the weather. Sunshine's great, and I was out in that. That was really fun. Soaking up a little bit of just that real, like, classic summertime energy.
It's summertime. It's officially summer.
Yeah, it's fully here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
June 22nd. So, sure. Yeah, it's summer. It's real summer now. Well, I've been getting involved in the Euro competition, which is awesome.
What team are you playing for?
Well, I'm not playing. No. No, that ship has sailed. No, it's for those who don't know, and I hope people know, because it really is interesting. It's this kind of like mini World Cup, but it only involves teams in Europe. That's no reason not to be interested, though. Basically, I think 24 teams altogether started this. It's called Euro 2020 because it was supposed to take place last year, and now it's taking place this year. But they kept the name, just either to confuse people or not confuse people. I'm not sure which, but I understand it. And it's just, it's so full of drama and intrigue and emotion. I mean, I assume everybody heard the story of Christian Eriksen. We mentioned it briefly last week. The player for Denmark, who had a cardiac arrest right on the field a week ago Saturday. And it was truly one of the most terrifying things to ever witness. And, you know, credit to the folks at ESPN, they never showed it again. It happened live, and they never, you know, went back to show you the dramatic scenes or anything like that. Instead, the players basically surrounded him as they were giving him CPR on the field. And basically, people, the sportscasters, were talking about how the game doesn't really matter. It's about, you know, life. It's about the precious things. And it was really a very, very emotional moment. They brought him back. They brought him back right there on the field. And he went to the hospital, and he's back home now and making a recovery. It's the most incredible thing to see. And just watching the emotion of the fans. I mean, it happened right there in Copenhagen. You know, he's a Danish football star. And they were so affected by this. And even the other teams were as well. Everybody was. The next game, they stopped 10 minutes in because his number was number 10. Just applauded him. He was in the hospital half a mile away. He could hear them from the stadium. It was the most perfect story. But it got even more perfect yesterday because the way it works is you have six divisions, four teams each. That's 24 altogether. And you play the other teams in that particular division. So that's three games. Denmark played their third game yesterday, and it was against Russia. It was in Copenhagen, and the other game in that division was Finland versus Belgium. And the way they do it for the third game, they play them both at the exact same time. They do that so that the teams don't have advanced knowledge of what they have to do in order to make it through to the knockout round. So sometimes you might have a team that says, you know, we don't have to win. We're going to go through anyway, so why even bother? And then you get a lousy game. So they do that last game at the same time for that reason. unfortunately, the sportscasters always ruin it and tell you what the other game is, what's happening in the other game, what the score is. You know, what applies to the players doesn't apply to the fans. But anyway, they needed, what Denmark needed was to win their game with Russia, but they had to win by 2 goals in order to make it through to the next round. And not only that, in the other game, Finland had to lose. So if Finland tied with Belgium, the top-ranked team, by the way, it didn't matter if Denmark beat Russia 50-0, they still wouldn't have gone through. So it was this all this drama, all this calculation, and just seeing this happening in two different stadiums. St. Petersburg in Russia was hosting the other game, but not Russia. Russia was in Copenhagen playing Denmark. Denmark scored 1-0. They're ahead. They're almost to the point where they have their 2 goals. They still need Finland to lose. Then on the other game, Belgium scores. The people in Copenhagen find out about it, and suddenly you hear this massive cheer going out amongst the crowd when nothing is happening on the field because they just found out the score that Belgium is ahead. And then they took the goal away because somebody was offsides, and then you hear a collective groan. Well, that went back and forth for a while, but in the end, Belgium defeated Finland 2-0, and Denmark defeated Russia 3-1. So they got their 2 goals. And they got their Finland defeat in the other city, and so they made it through. But it was the most fairy tale story you could ever imagine, where they just came from behind and were able to make it to the next round, thinking of their fallen player, you know, and doing that at home as well. It was just the most emotional thing. That's why people should watch Euro, because you see things like that. Yeah, sure, this kind of thing doesn't happen often, fortunately, but there are so many other little dramas playing out, and just trying to figure it all out, all the calculations, all the mathematical calculations you have to make in order to figure out who goes through and who doesn't go through and what teams need to do. It's really incredible. And also just seeing the different cultural things in various cities with the players, with the fans. That's always fascinating just to see. And the way it's broadcast, no commercials, 45 minutes straight of just action, not like any other sport that we're used to that's constantly breaking for selling products. And you get the full screen. Somebody tried this the first day of the competition. I think it was on ESPN2. You know that little crawl they have with all the other scorers? In the middle of the game, that suddenly popped up. I knew it wasn't going to last. It lasted maybe 4 minutes, and then it just was removed. Somebody got yelled at, because you don't do that for football. You don't mess up the screen and clutter it with other things. No, we want the whole screen, and we don't want any commercials. And that's what makes it great, is that those rules stick. Even here, they're respected.
Yeah, the whole game. Tournament itself has had this through line of what I imagine or could characterize or sum up as sportsmanship, and you're seeing it so vividly in this, and how these stories are playing out, as well as the commentating and as you said, cultural elements are brought forward, and we get a better understanding of what is going on behind the scenes, what's going on in some of the players' lives. Of course, with Denmark there, that becoming its own, like, really triumphant, just amazing breakthrough story. There's other things playing out, some more controversial things, and a real emphasis on diversity. They're trying to do that. And I agree with what you said, though there are ads. We could sit here and list the ads that we've been seeing, but it's done the way it's sort of a sideline thing, and they're just sort of a little bit animated, but it's on the field, you know?
On the field, yeah.
Yeah, and that's like, it's very subtle. It's there, but
Well, I think everybody in the stadium sees that too.
I think
right?
that's a good trade-off. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's not like you have bugs on the screen. And interfering with the actual program, and that's so annoying.
And interfering with the actual play, or even a timeout, or one of the things we saw recently or at this stage in it is wasting time being an issue a lot
in the game.
Yeah.
So, you can get a card, a yellow card for wasting time. Sure.
Cut away and sell some hot cocoa or whatever you're doing, but. That's part of the game.
Halftime. Yeah. You can do that then. But don't interrupt the game, the flow of the game. That's the most incredible thing to see that.
And I like how many different commentators there are and different players, like old people.
And they're from all around the world, too, and yet they're somehow communicating with each other on the field. The referees are from a different country than the players, and yet they're able to communicate effectively with all kinds of subtleties and nuances. And it's kind of a microcosm for what we can do globally. You don't have to be a sports fan to really be into this. I'm not really a sports fan. I'm just into the systems and the calculations and just the cooperation and all that. The event itself, it's fascinating. I don't really know the players. I recognize a couple of them and say, oh yeah, I remember that guy from the last time I saw something like this. But that's the extent of it. There are people who know so much, and I'm in awe of them. But there's only so much I can hold in my head, and this is basically figuring out when the games are on is taking up all my time. But it's not all good because there are ugly things that make their way into the games as well. What we've been seeing in Hungary lately is really troubling, to say the least. Now, a number of teams have been doing something which I think is incredible, taking the knee, like right before kickoff. All of England, all of Scotland, they just kneel on the ground for a couple of seconds. Statement, anti-racism, anti-discrimination. Colin Kaepernick, they get it.
Pro-diversity.
Exactly. That's what it's all about. Well, in Hungary, that didn't go over so well. In fact, there was a giant crowd of Hungary fans. Now, by the way, I should point out, unlike any other one of these competitions, these games were played in cities all throughout Europe. This was planned before the pandemic. It has nothing to do with the pandemic. I think it's the 60th anniversary or something. So they were planning on having it in different cities throughout. Usually it's in one country. So there are some games that were taking place in Budapest. Now, a giant crowd of Hungary fans marched to the Puskas Arena before their team faced France a few days ago, with those at the front sending a clear message over taking the knee. Flares and flags billowed across the wide road in Budapest as thousands descended on the national stadium for what they call the Group of Death clash. The reason it's called the Group of Death is because their division has Germany, France, Hungary, and Portugal. So except for Hungary, those are teams that you really don't want to meet. Anyway, a banner reading Brotherhood was held up at the front of a chanting crowd alongside one that called for players to stop their anti-racism protests pre-match. Think about that. We marvel at this in our country, but think about that. They're calling for them to stop saying anti-racist things. And there's a massive crowd of thousands of people that are demanding they do this. Yeah. that is what's happening in Budapest. Now, a number of boos and cheers have met the England team as they perform the gesture, and this is in their own stadium in England, before both of their Euro 2020 games so far, and it's seeing growing backlash from fans. Growing backlash! The French have abandoned taking the knee and have remained standing at kickoff. They fear it has begun to divide rather than fulfilling its original purpose of uniting. This is a real problem because it's only divisive if racists have a say in what you do, because they're not going to want you to say, as these Hungarian fans have made clear, they're not going to want you to say anti-racist things. So yeah, you're going to be dividing your racist fans from your non-racist fans. That's a good thing. That's something you should be trying to do. So to say that, yeah, we're going to stop doing this because it's a divisive thing. Being anti-racist is divisive. being inclusive is divisive? No, it's not divisive. It's the way we should be. And to be intimidated by these people and to bow to their demands, that's shameful. That's really shameful. Now, it gets worse because, as you may know, in Hungary, very recently, in fact, I think it might have even come into effect today, there's anti-LGBTQ legislation or law now. Basically makes it illegal to expose anyone under 18 to what they consider to be gay propaganda. Now, what's gay propaganda? Good question. It's basically anything that quote unquote normalizes gay lifestyle and says that this is okay. And the way they defend this, I was watching one of the legislators on TV talking about this. He said, we're not telling any adults what they can and cannot do. All we're saying is that for people under 18, we're leaving education as a sexual preference strictly to their parents. That's it. As if, yeah, that's nothing. That's just let their parents tell them what's what and not give them any information or education on sexual identity or preference anywhere else until after they're 18. Because by the time they're 18, their parents won't have had that much influence on them, being the sole source of information on that topic. And that is basically how that law is supposed to work. Well, obviously, other countries aren't thrilled with this. Other people everywhere aren't thrilled with this. It's terrible. It's awful. It's racist. It's homophobic. There's racism in there. Believe me, there's sexism in there. It's all in there. And it needs to be fought. Now, here's something interesting that a mayor in Germany, the mayor of Munich, wanted to do. His name is Dieter Reiter. His name is basically the same thing with a different letter. He said he wanted to light up the stadium in Munich in the colors of, well, rainbow colors. And that's for tomorrow's match between, get this, Germany and Hungary. Yeah. And he wanted to do that to protest against a new law in Hungary that bans the dissemination of content in schools deemed to promote homosexuality and gender change. You know, that's such a broad statement that could apply to anything. And don't for a moment think that there isn't dissemination of content in schools deemed to promote heterosexuality and no gender change. Of course there is. that's the norm. And to provide any information on other ways of living lives and to not be condemning of those other ways, that is something that is that should be expected in any free society. And to see that as a threat is really, really scary.
And less education around sexual identity, preference, and communities, lifestyle, whatever it is, at precisely a time when young people are having questions about what it means and are bombarded with messaging on how to be, like you said, in this dominant society, the things that are projected upon young people and reinforced through media and stereotypes are impossible to avoid. They're soaking all of that stuff up. So having anything in the curriculum that just at least places alternative and underrepresented communities in their consciousness as at least existing and having the dignity and the right to exist would do so much, I think, for well-being and health mentally for those students we know and young people, a good percentage, calculable percentage will identify that way ultimately. And denying them that until they're 18, who knows what kind of bullying, what kind of awkwardness and self-harm might result.
That's the thing.
Stunting that.
So many people do know. So many people know exactly what they're going to be going through. And, you know, to tell a kid who's, you know, under 18, we're not going to help you. Talk to your dad. Don't talk to anybody else about that. We'll see you when you're 18. Good luck. It's cruel. It's inhumane. It's horrible.
Inhumane.
Yeah, and needs to be fought at every single level. And it's shameful. And it's easy for us now to look at Hungary and say, my God, what are they doing over there? We don't have the same critique when it comes to what's happening in our own backyard, because there are very similar things going on in states in this country. We need to fight them just as hard, if not harder.
In states, in absolutely mm-hmm. every state, every territory, every locality mm-hmm. is facing these things. So absolutely. I mean, we should mean what we say domestically as well as, you know, how we project our American identity outwardly.
Anyway, so, okay, you see what's going on here. In Hungary, it's a bit ugly. They're anti-racist, and they're anti-LGBTQ. And the mayor of Munich in Germany wants to light up the stadium in rainbow colors for the game tomorrow night between Germany and Hungary, which to me is a legit way of speaking out. He was turned down. UEFA, the football federation that runs this whole Euro competition, they turned down his request. First of all, I didn't know that you had to request it from them. It's your damn stadium. You know, you can light it whatever color you want. I didn't think you had to ask. This is why I subscribe to the philosophy of just do something if you're not sure if you have to ask. And if you had to ask, well, then you'll find out later after you've already done it. Because in this particular case, he asked them and they said no. And their reason for saying no was because it was a challenge to Hungary. In fact, you know, on Euronews earlier today, there was a headline that said UEFA was standing in solidarity with the Hungarian anti-LGBTQ law. I think that was a little bit of editorializing there, because I'm not sure that's really where they're coming from. But what they said was UEFA, through its statutes, is a politically and religiously neutral organization. Given the political context of this specific request, a message aimed at a decision taken by the Hungarian National Parliament, UEFA must decline this request. However, they have proposed that the city of Munich illuminate the stadium with the rainbow colors on June 28th, when Euro is not taking place, or between July 3rd and 9th, which is the Christopher Street Day week in Munich. I didn't know they had a Christopher Street Day week in Munich. We don't even have that at Christopher Street, do we? Wow. That's great. Thanks for those suggestions, UEFA. But you're missing the point. The point is, this is happening now. These are the people, or they represent the people, that are doing these ugly things. It needs to be spoken out against. And, you know, since the mayor of Munich was somehow denied the right to light the stadium in his own city, it's up to the fans now. It's up to the people at the game to really make their presence known and to really make their anger at what Hungary is doing known. And it's up to all of us, not just people there. We can't ignore these things just because they're far away. And yeah, sports, who knew? These things are happening everywhere, and they're being talked about everywhere. And it's so relevant, so important.
Truly. So all part of this one single tournament, so much can come from it, culturally and in general society. We're gathered around it, watching and making sense of the rest of the world sort of alongside this incredible game.
Yeah. We in this country, we had Juneteenth. June 19th is Juneteenth. I'm ashamed to say that I grew up not knowing about Juneteenth. I grew up not knowing about Tulsa. And if you if you listen to what a lot of Republicans say, a lot of people right here on Long Island, that's just fine and dandy if you grow up not knowing these things. In fact, they want you to know less about the injustices that have taken place in our name, in our history. I think it's important to know these things. I think it makes you a stronger person. I think it makes us a stronger nation to know the mistakes that we have made in our past. Now, what's interesting about Juneteenth this year is that it suddenly became a federal holiday. Now, okay, am I the only one that's a bit shocked by this? I just happened to turn on the news a couple of days ago, or actually last week, and I heard that the Senate had voted unanimously to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. And my first reaction was, what, the U.S. Senate, our Senate, did that? Kyle, did you know this was going to happen? Because how did it become unanimous? Mitch McConnell, he's one of them. No, how? I mean, when did this take place? What, did they put something in the water? I just was blown away by it. It's great. Of course, I'm happy about it. But unanimous? They can't even agree on what color the sky is, let alone something of this magnitude. And I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out what the catch is. Why did they all agree to this so easily? Is it just they wanted another holiday? And I think I might be on to it, actually. I think I might be on to what this is really about, at least from the Republican point of view. Do you realize that this means every Father's Day is going to be a holiday weekend? Because Father's Day is always the third Sunday of June. And that pretty much coincides with when Juneteenth would be if it were a holiday weekend. Yeah. I'm still looking into this. I'm doing my own research. I'll get back to you. But until then, don't believe anything. But yeah, it's great. Juneteenth is the newest federal holiday. All of a sudden, everything was closed on Friday because this was signed into law on Thursday. How did that work exactly? The post office just said, hey, nobody come in tomorrow because it's a sudden holiday. I wonder if people showed up for work and found locked doors and weren't able to get in. It's really unusual. It's unusual. But we need to take this holiday to learn more about what it is that Juneteenth is all about. And some of our darker history of bad things that have happened in years past, bad things that continue to happen. This is important. You have to know this. You have to know these things. Now, locally, I mentioned on Long Island, we kind of have bad things too. Here's an example. Commack School District, which is, you know, right nearby, has removed an award-winning graphic novel about an Iranian girl's coming of age during that country's revolution. It's basically was required reading at Commack High School. Now it's not. That book will be removed and replaced, said Jordan Cox, the district's executive director of instructional services, at a June 8th community forum. In an email, Superintendent Donald James said the book, which was required for the district's roughly 500 11th graders this year, will not be required reading for future classes, but will still be available on our reading list and available for electives. District officials engage in an annual review of many books to determine curriculum as well as age-appropriate suitability. The statements came as the district faces pressure from parents over critical race theory, an approach to analyzing systemic racism. School teachers have repeatedly said they did not support or teach, though Cox said in an interview that parents' complaints had nothing to do with the decision to remove the book from the district's required reading. Kind of hard to believe, though. Cox said the decision had to do with the graphic nature of some parts of the book, though he declined to specify on the record what those are. Charles Schultz, really? Wow. Didn't see that coming. Charles Schultz, who is listed on the district website as secondary school English director with no graphic arts skills whatsoever, He said in an interview he had argued for keeping the book, which he viewed as a valuable resource. We know how much the students respond to it. We know how much meaning they take from it, especially when it comes to learning about the world outside Commack and Long Island. Now, Schultz is a Commack graduate who has taught or worked as an administrator in the district for 16 years, has never drawn a comic strip, said that James told him Wednesday he would be reassigned to the elementary level. Students and alumni criticized the decision to remove the book at a public forum and at a Board of Education meeting held last week in the Commack High School auditorium. This book is not inappropriate, like Shana Ravidran, 16 years old, a junior, said at the forum. She wants every English class to read at least one book related to issues related to issues faced by people of color, a move she said would address blind spots in our curriculum, which consists of many books written by men, many of them white. In an interview, Ravindran, who is of South Asian descent and has attended district schools since second grade, said she had been starved of representation for most of her school career. She and her friends looked forward to reading Persepolis, I hope I'm pronouncing that somewhat right. She was looking forward to reading that this year along with her friends. She said, "We were really excited. It was something we could actually connect to." The book is set in the 1970s and 80s in Iran and Europe. Follows a girl from a mostly secular, affluent family as Islamic fundamentalists win sway over Iranian Moors and eventually the machinery of state. Some parents at last week's Commack events described it as pornographic. Yeah, one of its 341 pages depicts torture of a mostly naked gorilla by the Shah's secret police. That's gorilla as in revolutionary, not the animal. The book also depicts adolescent or young adult drug use. Perish the thought that such a thing would be portrayed in the book that adolescents might have access to. Michiko Clark, a spokeswoman for book publisher Pantheon, the book's publisher, said, "We do not believe any school district should be discouraging students from reading this landmark work." Well, it's shameful when you have things like this going on, when you have school districts such as Smithtown, right next to Commack, living in fear of critical race theory, whatever that is, which basically translates to anything that is critical of our country, its history, the way we have treated people, the way races have been and continue to be treated. How is that not relevant? That is extremely relevant. And if you go through your educational career not knowing anything about that, I mean, I feel ignorant for not knowing about Tulsa and for not knowing about Juneteenth. But imagine, you can't really talk about slavery. You can't really talk about anti-Semitism. You can't really talk about hatred and white supremacy and the Klan and all of this. People seem to think that if you talk about these negative things, that's all people are going to remember. No, I think if you talk about these negative things, people will try to prevent those negative things from becoming our future. Whereas if they learn about the negative things after an entire educational career of not knowing about them, they're going to say, "Wow, I was lied to. This place really does suck. It's full of lies, full of hatred. What was my education all about?"
Yeah, the drug use thing, I mean, again, at a time when students are having questions and becoming exposed to lifestyles and people that are other than their safe family bubble, you know, telling stories or reading stories, analyzing it, critiquing the writing and interpreting it as a group is part of education, and we shouldn't be afraid of this. I think critical race theory itself is being held hostage right now in the political discourse, and with the aim to make it a catch-all for discrediting, as you said, anyone that critiques this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's shameful.
And it's easy to rally support around that. Just like in Hungary, they're rallying support against the players kneeling. It's easy just to whip up a frenzy and make it seem like we're under attack. We're going to be the victims.
And just wait and be vigilant for the stupid examples that are being feverishly sought as we speak as evidence, mounted evidence of some flaw in a very specific way of teaching our history, which is stupid. It's really oversimplifying the whole thing. And that's not what we need more of. We need more nuance and more detail and critique of our history to understand what we're facing in reality in our communities with our brothers and sisters, our neighbors around us. Being ignorant of that in your formative years creates people that will deny the existence of it when the news or other authors or academics say, hey, there's something wrong with this history. We will have formed generations of adults that turn to whomever is speaking and say, mm-hmm. Oh, I've never heard of that, therefore it doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And, which is about as intelligent as I read it on the internet, so it must be real.
Or some Hungarian kid who doesn't know anything about confusing feelings he or she might be having until they turn 18 and find out that their parents weren't telling them anything for all that period of time, hoping they turn into carbon copies of themselves. It's all about control. It's all about how you feed information to the next generation. Macy Gray, singer, actress, she wrote an editorial or an op-ed on Saturday calling for a redesign of the American flag. Now, before you get all whipped up into a frenzy, think about how many times the American flag has been redesigned in its history. And think about what's going on right now with these Blue Lives Matter flags that you see everywhere. And how is that not the exact same thing that we're talking about right now? But she opened the piece for Market Watch by observing that the Confederate flag, which was created as a symbol of opposition to the abolishment of slavery, has recently proven to be tired. We don't see it much anymore, she wrote. However, on the 6th of January, when the stormers rained on the nation's most precious hut, waving Old Glory, the memo was received. The American flag is its replacement. She went on to say, the American flag has been hijacked as code for a specific belief. God bless those believers. They can have it. Like the Confederate, it is tattered, dated, divisive, and incorrect. It no longer represents democracy and freedom. It no longer represents all of us. It's not fair to be forced to honor it. It's time for a new flag. Now, she gave a visual breakdown of our current flag, suggesting that while there have long been 50 stars on it, there should be 52. In her opinion, an extra pair of stars should go to Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, which she noted have been lobbying for statehood for decades. Both have been denied, since statehood would allow each territory's elected officials seats in the House, assuming D.C. reps would be African-American and Puerto Rican reps would be Hispanic. The ultimate assumption is that these elected officials will be Democratic. That alone is racist. And then there are the flag's white stripes, which were intended to represent purity and innocence, according to the Smithsonian. America is great. It is beautiful. Pure, it ain't. It is broken and in pieces, she wrote. Now, in her opinion piece, she gave a detailed description of the flag as she believes it should be. What if the stripes were off-white? What if there were 52 stars to include D.C. and Puerto Rico? What if the stars were the colors of all of us? Your skin tone and mine, like the melanin scale. The blue square represents vigilance and perseverance, and the red stripes stand for valor. America is all of these things. So what if those elements on the flag remained? It's something to think about. It's high time that we update and change something, because it's woefully outdated. Did you know the current flag was designed by a 17-year-old named Bob Heft, 1959?
I didn't know that.
Back then, there were only 48 states, though Hawaii and Alaska were up for statehood. And they ended up getting included as stars in Heft's design. He crafted a new flag with 50 stars for the then future because things had changed. 62 years later, 2021, we have changed, and it's time for a reset, a transformation, one that represents all states and all of us. Why is this a bad thing? It's a good thing. It's a good thing. More stars? Update in color? Hell yeah. It's time. And it's not a threat. If you see that as a threat, ask yourself what you're afraid of. What exactly are you afraid of?
It'll be kind of cool to see a gradient of tone across the stars.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of possibility. I think the next thing you have to do is have a design contest.
Everything that people are so afraid of involving change is actually something that could be so inclusive of everyone, including them, and can make their life better, more enjoyable, more just more interesting in so many ways. It's just sad having to constantly have the argument of not doing things the same way or going back to the way things were. I just can't even understand how that's a serious argument to go back to the way things were. Hey, speaking of moving forward, we're always talking about trains and how they need to expand.
I heard about something.
Well, maybe you can share what you heard about. I want to share this article, which I think is a bad article from NBC. It starts with the headline. Biden wants to bring Amtrak to a Northeast commuter corridor. Will riders support it? I mean, will riders support it? Of course riders will support it. They're not riders if they don't support it, for one thing. Question is, how many riders? It tells the story of people who go from places like Allentown, Pennsylvania, to New York for work. And it starts right off by saying, given the hypothetical option to take an Amtrak train instead of a long bus trip that leaves before dawn, something President Joe Biden wants to make possible with funding from his massive infrastructure proposal, this hypothetical person would refuse. Yeah, would refuse. Okay, I'm acclimated. I don't mind the bus. I sleep anyway, and the train is going to be so much more expensive. Her bus pulls in at 6:50 a.m. At the moment, for the thousands of Lehigh Valley residents who commute daily into New York by car or by the area's only bus operator, there are no other options. Biden, however, is looking to change that. As part of the billions he wants to spend on train projects in his American Jobs Plan, he wants to improve service and connect new city pairs on Amtrak's Northeast Corridor, the network of commuter trains connecting hubs from Boston to Washington, D.C. That, according to Amtrak, Pennsylvania politicians and Biden himself would aim to include the resumption of passenger train service connecting New York and Allentown, the third largest city in Pennsylvania and the heart of the quickly growing Lehigh Valley. How is this a debate? It makes sense, and it was done before. But even if Congress passed the package, obstacles await, local lawmakers say. In the 60 years since passenger rail service connecting the area with New York was discontinued, bus service has reliably and more affordably filled the void. Experts and politicians note that it won't just disappear. And the article is filled with one thing after another about why it won't work, the freight lines are in the way. Look, it happened before, it can happen again. Please stop with these articles telling us all the ways it won't happen and focus on why it should happen, why these are good things. Because it's very easy to tear things down. It takes skill to, you know, to come up with creative, imaginative ways to do things better. And certainly a fast train ride with more space is better than a cramped bus that only leaves once a day. Now, price? Well, you don't know what the price is yet because it doesn't exist. You're just assuming it'll be more expensive. How about if it's subsidized like it is in other places? What if it costs the same? Airlines are subsidized. Why do you think airlines are so cheap? The same thing can happen here. You talk about the cost of rail construction and maintenance. How about roads? They cost something to build and to maintain. And there's all kinds of vehicles on those all the time. So we can do the same thing. It's not that difficult.
It's important also to build a larger system. And what that takes is various components in different localities. And if there is an initiative there to build out on any level and encourage less buses on the roads, as you said, and while increasing that network, it's not like build it and they'll come, but you definitely should think about encouraging ridership and how you can provide or have customers for that build out, because it really helps the larger train system, and the train system doesn't ordinarily have that. So it really benefits at every opportunity.
What they don't mention once, what NBC does not mention once in this article, is the fact that buses are belching diesel fumes and basically clogging up the highways. Whereas trains, electric train is much greener, faster, more comfortable, and it could be cheaper. It should be cheaper. But here's a typical quote. If you subsidize the train, anyone can afford it. But if you don't, then what? Bus carriers provide outstanding service every day at a very affordable price. You have to really think, what's the most affordable way? That according to Peter Pantuso. He's the president and CEO of the American Bus Association. For God's sake, you want to make the article a little bit fair here. Maybe not quote the president of the American Bus Association in asking whether or not trains should replace buses. What do you think he's going to say? My God.
I think like Greyhound itself should have a place in the larger transportation system.
Yeah, sure.
It's neglected. It's actually owned by a British company right now.
Oh, wow.
And I know there are a lot of people that depend on those trips, and it should fit in. I mean, those often are relied on by Amtrak to connect passengers when something fails.
They have buses in Europe, and they have so many trains in Europe that you can go anywhere by train in Europe, but there are also buses. Buses are not in danger. If you like buses, don't worry.
They shouldn't be forgotten is all.
Who's
going to
forget about buses?
No, in the grand civil engineering scheme of
Meanwhile,
things.
In Germany, where they don't have NBC writing articles, Germany's national rail operator today announced plans to reopen 20 stretches of railway, 20, around the country that have been closed over the years, a move intended to help get more people and freight on trains as the country steps up efforts to fight climate change. That's how you write a damn article. That's how you run a rail system. The stretches that state-owned Deutsche Bahn plans to revive have a total length of about 152 miles. They were chosen after a team of experts assessed shuttered routes totaling around 800 miles for potential viability. They include suburban lines in and around Berlin and Dusseldorf, as well as other local routes in various parts of the country. Our aim, we want to win over more people for the railway, get more goods on the tracks. Every kilometer of track is active climate protection. Can we just paint that on the offices of bus companies and train companies in this country? Every mile of track is active climate protection. Period. NBC, you listening? I'm sick of all these negative articles and all these people saying, oh, it'll never work. It never works if you don't do anything.
Yeah, and consolidating of them, I mean the trains themselves are already sort of a hybrid electric system. Buses themselves will probably become part of an electric charging network in this country, as well as, you know, as vehicles begin to emerge in larger numbers.
What's your concern? That buses are going to be left behind or what?
No. I'm just saying they have to transform a lot before they could compete with the ecological benefit of and efficiency of rail in general.
That's their problem. Let NBC write an article about buses and how they're not going to make it. But I think they'll be fine.
But that wasn't the story that I heard about.
Yeah, what was your story?
Okay. Do you remember any of the long-distance trips? Do you remember the seats?
Where are
like
we?
On,
what part of the world
Superliners.
In the United States?
Empire Builder. Yeah, on Amtrak.
Okay. What about them?
You don't remember? Okay.
I remember the trains. What am I supposed to remember specifically?
The covering on the seats.
I don't remember the covering on the seats.
That blue cloth.
Okay. All right. Know? I can picture it.
They got the paper on the headrest.
Paper on the headrest. Yeah.
Yeah. They reupholstered all of it.
Well, I'll be.
on some of the select long distance routes now, you will find in roomettes, bedrooms, and even business class and regular coach seats, they are all with like a leather or some sort of fake leather, like a leatherette material, and no more paper headrests. They have like a nice diamond pattern on the headrest.
And I'll bet NBC would have said that was impossible a year ago.
I saw all these pictures of it, and it looks really inspiring. A little bit of a change to welcome people.
Okay,
back.
But we need bigger change than that. But that's it's good. It's a start. It shows that there's motivation.
Now it really is pitiful.
We need the damn money. Let's get things going. Let's build a system in this country.
They're spending some of it, but
hopefully not wasting it. But
hopefully they can do more than just that.
We need a lot more.
And I think they changed.
We need attitudes to change is what we really need.
I think they don't have little shampoo bottles. They got a big, it's tiny little steps. We really need to do a lot more.
Hey, I want to thank the people who wrote in after last week when I had that weird episode, which wasn't so weird because I'd been through it before, where I just kind of find it hard to read things and get a little confused, although I didn't get confused last week. I'm told I wasn't confused.
I got confused.
You got confused, yes. I can transfer it. This from Tony. Hi, regarding the symptoms that he described during the show, I had them for a couple of decades. I was given a prescription for Cafergot. Wow. If I took this stuff as soon as I realized it was happening, it eliminated the visual symptoms within a few minutes. I hope this helps. Well, Tony, it might. I'll ask my doctor about it. Sounds like it would be good to have something to just take to make it go away. But otherwise, just basically relaxing for about a half hour usually takes care of it and doesn't come back. Hi, Emmanuel. Hope you're feeling better. Question. Many, many years ago on Off the Wall or Off the Hook, you described an episode, I think it was Off the Wall, that you were having where you thought you might be having a stroke. You said you were typing and all of a sudden couldn't form words and called a friend. I don't remember the outcome of that was, but I was wondering if it was one of the first times you had one of those migraines. Just curious. No idea why I remember this. Sorry, Ryan. Ryan, you remember this because you have a good memory. And yes, it happened in, I believe, 2005. I talked about it on Off the Wall. In fact, it happened on a Tuesday. I was preparing for Off the Wall, and that the symptom you described occurred, and I wasn't familiar with it. So, yeah, I called a friend, took me to the hospital. They admitted me because they were concerned. They thought I might be having a stroke, but they ran all kinds of tests on me, and they are the ones that concluded that it was just this painless migraine that some people get sometimes. It's scary. It can be very scary if you don't know what's happening. When you do know what's happening, then you can manage it, and that's basically how it works. So every few months or so, something like that happens. It doesn't usually happen on the air, but we're all subject to things like this.
Yeah, it's important to listen to your body and symptoms and take care of oneself whenever some sudden change or something noticeable. I don't know. Just you don't feel right. Absolutely. And, monitor your caffeine input and rest. Those are all important things, too. As we're becoming more active, we have to
exactly
relax as well.
We are out of time. I want to encourage everybody to go out there and get a vaccine. Who has not gotten the vaccine, especially the younger people, because we really need to get those numbers up. I'm seeing spikes in places like Missouri now and places where people aren't getting vaccinated. Yeah, this is what we expected to happen. You can't just shrug this off. It's important. It's safe. It has been proven. It has been studied by many, many people throughout the world. And there are different kinds of vaccines throughout the world, too. Please take care of yourselves. Take care of the people around you so that we can get back to complete normalcy, as normal as we can possibly be. Super important that we do that. And also, let's not forget what they're doing in Brazil right now. They're holding the leader there accountable for the half a million deaths that didn't have to occur. And we should be doing the same thing here in this country for the nonsense that happened last year. We had 600,000 people die, many of whom did not have to die because of this virus. If you understand the science, if you follow the guidelines, you can get through things like this safely. If you ignore it, if you think that you know more than the people that study this as a career, you're asking for all kinds of catastrophes. And when people in charge, when people who are leaders encourage you to do that. They should be held accountable. More on this, hopefully a lot more on this in the weeks to come. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned to WUSB and listen for Finn coming up at 7. We'll see you next week.
So long.